You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares. Good morning, welcome to the show. Wednesday, March the 6th, grey day here in TW11. Grey everywhere, and although it's dry, there's no sign of the ground tightening meaningfully at Cheltenham ahead of the festival. Going stick readings are very low. It's officially soft, heavy in places, only a sprinkle, and it'll be really attritional, and the forecast gets unsettled again from the weekend. Later in this show, you'll be hearing about a horse who's been a bit of a dark horse, but a bit of a wise guy horse on the preview circuit. A horse without obvious credentials for the Triumph Hurdle, but whose credentials might become more obvious when you've heard from his former trainer, who parted with the horse for a king's ransom. Also, later in the show, we expand on this breaking news. And this breaking news is that Late Night Pass, a strong fancy for the Grand National, will revert to his former trainer, the man who trained Late Night Pass to win Pointer Points and Hunter Chases. Tom Ellis will officially be the trainer of the horse for the Grand National. He will leave the yard of Dan Skelton and he will run in Tom's mother's colours, and he'll be ridden by Tom's wife, Gina Andrews. He just has to pass his final module. He explains more later in the show. First, however, the rapid drug testing mechanism used for jockeys on racecourses has come under scrutiny and come under fire once again after what took place last night at Southall involving jockey Kieran O'Neill, who initially tested positive but firmly believes that a urine sample will come back negative today. Here he is with more.
As we go into the race course, you know, it's random testing and there's 18 guys getting tested every time, and I've gone in and we've gone through stipulation. It's a swab test, so I've done the swab test.
So, for those who don't know, what do they do when they give you a swab test?
It's like in a packet, and you literally open the packet, they put it out to take some saliva off your tongue, and actually take it, whatever to do, to touch your neck with it and a bit off your face, and then some on your tongue. And then they put it into it must be a little machine that's in front of you. And literally, she said it was fine. And as I walked away to go to way out, she came back to me and she said, oh, it's come back positive. I literally said, what? Come back positive? I said, okay, so we'll do another one. That's the random test, is to do another one. So I've done another one, and another one has failed.
And so the second one's come back positive as well?
As well, yeah. And I said, okay. So then it was a case of...
And did she tell you what it was positive for?
Cocaine, mm-hmm. Which was very, very, very strange. Because as I said, I've never touched a drug in my life, or I don't intend to. But it's a case of where I was just... cocaine. I was so surprised, you know, so surprised. And then she said, oh, we'll have to do a urine test. I said, yeah, no problem. So I've done a urine test, and whatever to do with the urine test, with the card, it can tell if you've, I don't know if you've taken it or whatever, the card colour comes up, and that showed it was fine. So then she said, I was cleared to ride today.
Right, so what's happened in the interim? So you've failed two swab tests, and then you've passed a urine test. And now, from what you're saying to me, a urine test is the kind of gold standard, is it? So if you pass that, that supersedes everything else that's gone before.
Literally, yeah. Which it is, because that's the main thing is the urine test, and whatever to do with the card, the whatever to do with the card, it just tells you straight away if I think if it's on it or cocaine shows or something on it. But there was nothing on it to show that I had nothing in my urine test.
Okay. So people will be thinking, well, okay, that's the fail safe. He's passed the fail safe. Happy days. On you go. No harm done. That's why there's a check and balance. Why did it pose you a problem last night?
They just stood me down straight away because I failed the swab test. And it was a case of where it was very upsetting for me last night. You know, I was driving home in the car, and it was a case of where, you know, the first person I have to ring is my mum to tell her this, which is very embarrassing. You know, and it's very damaging more than anything, you know. And I spoke to Sean Levy, you know, Sean Levy hid in a dark room for 5 days about this. And it's, you know, something's got to be done and done very quickly. You know, this has happened twice now and it's the same results, you know. And, you know, they stood me down on the day as I've walked out of the waiting room. Everyone's looking at me if like to say, oh, what's he doing or what's happened? And it's a case of when I walked out, the first person I seen was Scott Dixon. And I had
So Scott Dixon's a trainer. Scott Dixon, so you had three rides for him last night. You failed your swab test and the results of the urine test haven't come back yet. Is that right?
Yeah, it's going to the lab today. It's going to the lab today, but I have to go today and do another swab test and I'm just waiting for the results to come back. So I've got to go to the racetrack today to do another swab test. And
so hang on, just for the avoidance of doubt, because we've got to get this right. So the two swab tests come back positive for cocaine. Then you take a urine test. The urine test has to go to the lab today to be checked. But so how do you know that the urine test is going to come back negative, given what you saw last night? Is that because they can tell you instantly, but it needs to be checked?
Yeah, literally, that's what she said to me. I don't know what way to work. They have a little card where they can see whatever's on the card, the colour or something, whatever's on the card. I don't really know because I've never been in a situation before. And it's a case of where, when it was Sean Levy's, with Your Majesty the Queen died, and it was a Friday, his took, I think it was 8 days to come back, with everything happening and everything being stopped. But with me, it's gone through a fast track, so I'm hoping to get the results later on this evening.
Okay, but last night you missed three rides for Scott Dixon, and you're presumably not allowed to ride until the results of that urine test come back?
Well, I have to go and do another swab test today when I go to the racetrack, so I presume if that's clear, I can ride. So I don't really know the process of doing it because, as I said, Nick, I haven't gone through this process before, which I never thought I would.
But did anyone tell you what you can do today? Did anyone tell you, right, this is what you can and can't do, this is where you're stood down, this is where... Has anyone told you what's going to happen today?
No, literally, they just told me I have to go and do another swab test today when I get to the racetrack.
And let's just clear this. For the avoidance of doubt, you maintain that you've never taken cocaine?
Oh, not in a million years, never. You know, I wouldn't even, you know, I very rarely drink, you know, and as everybody who, like, whoever knows me and know, like, I like a bit of banter and a bit of fun, but that's the one thing I'd never even come to my mind of doing or taking, you know, and I'm really looking forward to this result coming back because I know I'll be passing and, you know, there's serious questions to be answered on this, you know, this for more than, it's a reputation more than anything.
Yeah, you know, as you've said, you've missed rides, it's been written up on an official steward's report, and you've actually been told, or it's been indicated to you, that the official test is clear.
Literally, on the urine, the woman that was doing it said it's clear. But then the two swab tests, which Sean Levy failed, but then he passed in the urine, it's the same matter over again. You know, as I said last night, for a young kid coming into racing, and this happens, you know, it's going to be a bad reputation. And, you know, as I said, something's got to be done ASAP, you know, and the BHA have to start talking and, you know, they've got to do something about it very, very quickly or something's going to be happening again.
All right, that was Kieran O'Neill, who had a very productive year last year and is forging a really important trainer-jockey relationship with his partner, Alice Haynes. He was supposed to ride three, as he told you, at Southall last night. Now, in the steward's report, and this is what really alerted me to this, Kieran O'Neill was taken off his three rides officially on the steward's report, and the reason given was other, which, to be honest, always sets the hair running. If you see the other next to the jockey's name, it normally suggests something of this nature. Now, Cornelius Lysett's with me this morning. Cornelius, you've been listening to that, and clearly we have only one version of events here, though there's no reason to doubt the veracity of that version of events. So sure was Kieran in that conversation there. But whichever way you slice this, there appears to be some sort of a problem with this swab testing. If we take this and the Sean Levy case as one, just remind everybody what happened in the Sean Levy case.
Yeah, that was in that was some time ago now, actually, September of 2022, and a similar type of scenario happened. He failed the swab test side of things. And then the urine sample on that occasion, I think, was sent on for analysis. And the suggestion is it was September of 2022 that the late Queen had just died and everything was slowed up. So he wasn't able to ride for 8 days. In this case, Kieran O'Neill is anticipating the possibility that he'd be allowed to ride at Kempton today. And the whole process is going to get a bit quicker. But what happened as far as Sean Levy was concerned was that there was a certain amount of publicity, crucial part of this whole story, a certain amount of nodding and winking over the whole matter. Took 8 days for him to be allowed to resume riding. During that time, there was a big money possibility, a chance of winning a big prize with British Racing's Racing League on that occasion. So it was later on in the year, busy old time. And ultimately, he was completely exonerated. And I think in the statement at the time, they talked about a supplement that he'd taken, perhaps triggering the false positive. Ultimately, though, he didn't really, the whole matter was investigated and sort of dragged on through until last summer. So it was hanging over him. And I know he spoke at the time, I think Kieran O'Neill put it in that colourful terms, that he hid in a darkened room. It was really stressful for a number of months. He's a high profile, very successful rider. And there were question marks at the time around his reputation, which he found very difficult to deal with. Ultimately, though, he was completely exonerated. But what was striking at the time was were quotes from other jockeys saying, look, they've got this saliva process, supposedly rapid saliva testing process, which we're just not sure that we've got confidence in. The confidence was, to an extent, sorted out again. But then you get a case like this. And as you rightly say, we've only heard one side of the story. But the story Kieran O'Neill tells is a pretty compelling story. So there'll be further question marks in this hugely important part of a jockey's life.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, without wishing to unfairly bury the BHA or its testing process, clearly this is something they're going to have to look at, because if, as we suspect, this urine sample, when it comes back from the laboratory, comes back as the indication suggested it would, Kieran O'Neill was told, that it is negative and it does not confirm the swab test, then that is only going to further undermine confidence in those swab tests. And as he was saying, you know, he has to ring his mum and tell her why he's missing rides. And it's just quite a traumatic experience for anyone to go through.
Absolutely. And the part of this which is raises eyebrows, and, you know, I repeat, we haven't heard the British Horse Racing Authority's side of it, is that the urine test was taken and, indications were that it was clear. However, I think you described it, and he agreed that the urine test is seen as the sort of gold standard in this particular area. So the indications were it was clear, but he was still stood down. Now, that's going to be something that I'm sure the PJA, the Professional Jockeys Association, will take up. If a urine test indicator is clear, shouldn't things be allowed? Well, this will be the discussion. Shouldn't things be allowed to continue pending further analysis of the urine sample, rather than the other way round, which appears to have happened in this case, that he's not allowed to ride pending the analysis of the urine sample, of which early indications are that it's not going to be a positive. So it's a difficult area. Confidence, though, is so, you know, it's so important in this whole matter. These men and women are going out to ride in races on the flat, on the all-weather circuit, on the jumping circuit. They have to undergo drugs tests on a, or testing on a fairly regular basis. But they are happy to cooperate with that. But the cooperation is going to, or the levels of cooperation must be surely questioned if you get another situation where a rider has possibly, and we don't know the full story yet, has possibly a false negative, has all the coverage around it, and then ends up being a completely innocent party. And they've got to have confidence, the riders, and clearly it's an area for the British Horse Racing Authority to be looking at very hard.
Well, the British Horse Racing Authority has released a statement. They say the process for handling non-negative samples on race day as part of the ongoing pilot of sweat saliva sampling was agreed between the BHA and the PJA. As part of the agreed process, which utilises a Home Office-approved testing kit used by police forces globally, should a rider return a non-negative sample, they will then be tested a second time. Should the second sample also return non-negative, then, in the interest of safety for horses and riders, the jockey should be stood down for the day. Mr. O'Neill was stood down on the day, having provided two non-negative samples. 16 jockeys were tested yesterday and 16 on Monday, with only Mr. O'Neill returning these two non-negative samples. As part of the process, a urine sample screening is also to be taken on the day. This is for indicative processes only as part of the trial. It operates to different thresholds and does not form part of the immediate regulatory process. Mr. O'Neill's urine sample returned a negative result on course, but is not relevant to his being able to ride today and beyond. This same urine sample is also sent away for analysis at the official testing laboratory. Mr. O'Neill will be permitted to ride today and beyond, pending the return of this urine result, provided he returns a negative sweat saliva sample prior to weighing out. A hair sample will also be taken. Ensuring the safety of jockeys competing in our sport is a priority for the BHA. We appreciate the strength of feeling from Mr. O'Neill, but this alone is not enough to make judgment about the testing process or its ability to detect the intentional or sometimes inadvertent presence of substances in a rider's system. The proper process must be allowed to take its course. So, a pretty uncompromising statement there from the BHA, reinforcing its procedures and reinforcing its own faith in the procedures that it undertakes. And that, I'm sure, is a story that is going to run for a little longer. All right, latest forfeit stage for the Randox Grand National yesterday. 81 entries remain. To be honest, precious few of them are trained in this country, and precious few of those that are guaranteed a run. But one that is and is Late Night Pass, who we've spoken about quite a bit on this podcast. And we spoke to his rider, Gina Andrews, a few weeks ago, and it was a very popular episode it was too. Now, there's a little further twist to the Late Night Pass tale, because he might be with, well, I was going to say he might be with a different trainer by the time he runs, but it's kind of as you were, really, because was formerly trained by Gina's husband, Tom Ellis. And that is where I think he is going to return in time for the Grand National. Tom is with me now. So, Tom, what's the form? He's been with Dan, who we should point out is your best mate. So no one's falling out here.
We were at school together. Yeah, he was best man at my wedding, as I was at his, you know. And he's been really, really helpful in letting us live the start of this journey anyway.
Excellent. So what's happening now then? Just give us what the situation is now, because up to this point you have not been an officially licensed trainer, which you would need to be in order to run the horse in the Grand National under your name.
Yeah, we would. It's something Gina and I have discussed over the last 12 or 18 months, really. That at some point we might need to look down this route. We've obviously got a fairly sizable point-to-point operation that's grown very quickly since 2015, and we just felt that if we were ever going to do it, now's probably the right time with a horse like him to hopefully fly the flag a bit, really.
So he effectively is the accelerant, really, for what is going to come in the future. This is the start of a whole new way of running things. So what would happen? How would you divide the responsibilities? Because obviously you need a separate yard of rules horses and pointers, don't you? Like the Rowleys and the Hills and whoever else does.
So our place is basically three American barns, 18 in each one. We're going to license one barn for the time being and see how we go over the next sort of 12 months. But I think really the sort of main thing behind this is I felt, however long I train horses for, I'll never have a horse bred by my mum, ridden by my wife, that's got a small chance of running a reasonable race in the Grand National. So it was probably a case of having to just get on and bite the bullet a bit, really.
And when we spoke to Dan about the horse a few weeks ago, he was saying that he likes a little downtime between his runs, and he's been back at your mum's a few times as well. So presumably, once you get your last module done, when do you complete your last trainer's module?
So last module's done on March 22nd, which gives us sort of a week spare to get him into training, basically. So hopefully, you know, everything will be back and done by the time it needs to be, which is hopefully what's going to happen.
And you've been very much involved along the way, and you used to train the horse. You're going to train him again. How's he doing? Is the whole team ready, happy with his preparation after his hurdles run at Haydock?
Yeah, I mean, Haydock wasn't ideal. Like, the weather's probably played a big part in that. He was running a nice race till he stumbled badly in that ground on the bottom bend. But that was very much just a prep, really, for the April target. He's followed, to be honest, we haven't altered a lot with him, really. Yes, he's been to Dan's and he's been home. He came back from Dan's the Wednesday after Haydock, so he's been back and he's been riding around the farm, and just started to step his training up again now. And yeah, hopefully we've prepared him for Aintree the last 3 years, and we're not going to alter things massively just because we're running in a Grand National over at Fox Hunters, really. It's a case of just doing what's right for him, I think.
Now, you did say that it's unlikely that you'll ever have another horse running in a race like this that's bred and owned by your mum and ridden by your wife, but it's not completely impossible, isn't it? Aren't there some more siblings coming along? Aren't there some more late nights in the pipeline?
There is, yeah. There's, this half-sister to Late Night Pass, she's actually in foal because unfortunately she picked an injury up last year. So she's in foal with potentially a three-part brother or sister to Late Night Pass.
That's Late Night Fumble, isn't it? Yeah.
That's Late Night Fumble. Then Late Night Rumble, he's won 3 of his 6-pointer points and he's going to head for the intermediate final at Cheltenham Hunter Chase meeting in May, which we won with both the first two. So that'd be nice. He looks a real stout stayer. He's not as good as his brother, but none of them were that good at that stage of their lives anyway, so there's improvement hopefully to come from him. And then there's a full brother to Late Night Pass. It's a three-year-old, just turned three-year-old now, so he'll be an exciting one, definitely.
And what are you calling him? You've had Late Night Pass, Late Night Fumble and Late Night Rumble.
I don't get involved in the naming side of it. I leave that totally down to mum and dad, but they don't like some of our suggestions. So, yeah, we'll leave that to them, definitely.
All right. So, well, all I can do is wish you the very best and hope that this late night escapade, well, maybe that's too many letters, isn't it? This particular late night escapade has the conclusion that everybody wants. And best of luck with the new career, Tom.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, that was Tom Ellis, who is, if the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, going to be once again the trainer of Late Night Pass, but this time with an official full license if the module goes through next week. And that'll be a very, very special moment for him. And of course, the other beautiful thing about it, Cornelius, is, as he said, it kind of opens the door to the next phase of his and their careers.
And probably not exactly when they were expecting the door to open, but it has opened and also provides the race. I think Late Night Pass, well, we know Late Night Pass is guaranteed a run if he gets there. And that's going to be a fabulous story going into the race. There aren't that many fabulous stories in the Grand National at this stage, but there aren't that many fabulous stories that are associated with British contenders. So if Late Night Pass gets there okay with the husband and wife involved and family horse as well, Late Night Pass, clearly trained with this race in mind, having run fifth in a hurdle race last time at Haydock. Now it's going to be a really nice one for everyone to latch onto in true Grand National style. So really looking forward to that side of it. And to a horse that won at Cheltenham in December, Late Night Pass, in nice style, who's clearly got credentials and has the opportunity to run a very big race. So all in all, big plus for the Grand National. Really looking forward to the challenge of late night pass for the extended Ellis family.
Cornelius, you, like me and everybody else, has been on the Cheltenham Festival preview circuit, which comes with both health and wealth warnings, because you get so many tips that you go dizzy and bust if you paid attention to all of them. But is there anything that's particularly piqued your interest?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been to four, and I've done my four. And what was really striking was that one horse that I'd barely ever heard, well, barely ever heard of, I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of, got big mentions twice. There was one after racing at Plumpton last week, and there was a mention from a Shrewdie on the panel for a horse called Ethical Diamond. And then I went to another one in London on Friday, and the person who was chairing it said, I've heard from some shrewd sources in Ireland of a name that I hadn't really ever heard of. And I thought to myself, well, it won't be the same horse I heard in the pub at Plumpton in the Jolly Sportsman at Plumpton on Monday, surely. And my goodness, it was. So the horse concerned is in the Triumph Hurdle, trained by Willie Mullins, and it will be string number, well, probably four or five for the race. And if you're very familiar with this horse, then my hat comes off to you. And the horse is called Ethical Diamond. Interestingly, at the start of last week, I think available about 33-1, 40-1 for the Triumph Hurdle. But Ethical Diamond, running in the colours of HOS Syndicate, trained by Willie Mullins, formerly trained by Michael William O'Mara on the flat to win a Limerick maiden on the flat and then subsequently to be sold for a lot of money, is now as short as 16-1. So maybe that shrewdness, but two runs so far, and you wouldn't be having your house on it based on those two runs. But the last one was pretty promising.
Well, I've been doing a bit of due diligence for you. I hope you're impressed.
You're so kind. The service you provide on this podcast is extraordinary.
Well, I didn't think there was a right lot of point in calling Willie Mullins and saying, you know, talk me through your seven runners in the Triumph Hurdle or whatever. But I did think, well, let's just try and find out how good this horse is and speak to his former trainer, the man who passed him on for 320,000 guineas. And that is, as you say, Michael William O'Mara. I tracked him down on his gallops a little bit earlier on, and this is what he told me about Ethical Diamond.
I thought he was a talented horse. He wasn't full of speed early days, but you knew it was there. Mm. And when we were aiming for the, when he ran in the Curragh, he showed a lot that day, the day that in the conditions the Curragh was in on his first race. And then I think he was third in Roscommon, was it, or second in Roscommon? And
yeah, he was third at Roscommon, and then quite impressive at Limerick, Racing Post rating of in the high 90s.
He won that very easy. And like, he even to ride him, he acted like a horse that would stay, you know.
Mm.
So yeah.
And when were you always thinking of him as a sort of horse that the Jumps boys might come after? Was that always in the back of your mind when you were kicking on with him initially?
Well, our game is to try and the fillies that we have on the farm.
Mm.
Was to improve the farm, but on him, he was always going to be grow into a good size horse, you know.
Mm.
And I did think the National Hunt men would like him.
So he'd be
seen the mare is a mess, is a pretty big mare as well, you know, and she's gone back to Oughthead again.
So you bred this horse as well, Michael?
William Kendi bred her.
Okay, but you've known him right from the word go. You're kind of heavily involved in the production of the horses as well as the the training of them.
I looked after him in the early days as a foal, even. Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So to your mind, given what you know about him, do you think he's got the attributes in terms of talent, temperament, agility to show up in a race like a Triumph Hurdle?
I do, yeah.
I think if the ground is very soft and nearly heavy, I'd leave the race alone.
Right, okay.
I just, like, after the first run of Leopardstown, you can already write it off. He was running through puddles and jumping like a cat in the air with pressure from behind. You know, it wasn't a great introduction, I would say. I'm not saying that, but the second race, then, it showed that he had a lot of talent ahead of him in going over hurdles.
Well, I mean, I'm intrigued. It would be, I mean, Willie Mullins has pulled off many great feats. I think winning a Triumph Hurdle with a horse whose jumps form figures are 0-6, even in a grade one, would be another one. But that's why I needed to come to you to say, is he good enough? And I've got my answer. So I appreciate it. Now, have you got any more on the production line? This is your chance.
No, I'm quiet at the moment now.
Oh, well, that's a shame. I hope another one comes along for you, Michael. Thanks for chatting to me.
There's a lot of breakers just in the butt that are going along, but we don't know what we have yet, you know.
Okay, well, I appreciate your time. I know it's a slightly unusual request, but it's very, very, very kind of you.
Well, you know yourself, the Triumph Hurdle is not an easy race to win, like, to go from start to finish, but if you were to be on one that, he'd be a nice one to be on.
Especially at 25-1.
Yeah,
14-1
I see now.
What's this? Possibly since we've been having this conversation.
That's why you were ringing me.
I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
No problem. Look after yourself.
Take care. Right, well, there you are, Cornelius. That was Michael O'Mara. I mean, it's not putting you off, but he is saying be wary if it's a bog. But
yeah, and have you seen, I was just looking up the situation at Cheltenham at the moment. So the latest update on the ground via the BHA admin website, which is, I think, does have technical issues. So the updates aren't at the moment as quick as they might like to be. They're working on that. But the update from Cheltenham yesterday morning, this is Tuesday morning, was soft, heavy in places. And I just looked at the weather forecast for the sort of Cotswoldy area. From Saturday onwards, it's damp. But the percentages being put up on websites are sort of around about the 40%. So there's every chance, as we all know, the Cheltenham racecourse and area can have a microclimate of its own. So it might end up being dry there and wet all around. But, you know, it is going to be quite, it's going to be quite examining, isn't it? It looks like pretty much from the word go, which is hardly surprising at the end of the winter that we've had in Britain. But that would be your question mark. I think the eye-catching thing, apart from the fact the horse ran really quite well, Ethical Diamond at Leopardstown at the Dublin Racing Festival, is the amount of money that it changed hands for from flat to Willie Mullins. Now, that is plenty of money for a horse that won a maiden race at Limerick. So clearly, it filled a few eyes at the sales.
But as I said to Michael, if you run to a Racing Post rating of 96 on your third run and it's a maiden, you're ripe for the plucking, aren't you? If you're the right sort of physique, you're either going to Willie Mullins or you're going to Australia, because he clearly stays really well. So, you know, well done them. And I shouldn't think it'll be the first or last one they move on either for that kind of money. The answer to this question is going to be yes. Do you fancy a Cheltenham preview where you don't have to leave your front door and you don't get fed the same duff information over and over and over again? Well, you can, because you can tune into the Weatherby's Bloodstock Cheltenham preview, which tries to pick you the winners from a breeding perspective. You think, well, surely that's easy. We just pick the ones by the good stallions. Well, it's a bit more complex than that, because the breed is that little bit more diverse, as we're going to hear in a few moments' time. The panel is brilliant. You'll know them all. Jane Mangan, of course, who appears on here all the time. Victor Connolly, who's been with us a good few times, is on the panel. Bertrand Lemaitre, you'll have heard him talking about Telem in recent weeks and months. Jess Stafford is your host, and Dave Futter from Yorton Farm, the preeminent stallion station for National Hunter Horses in Great Britain, is also amongst the lineup. And Dave joins me now. And Dave, I mentioned the diversity of the breed. I know it's something that you've been
banging on about expounding for ages, but it is important when it comes to Cheltenham, because no two winners were alike last year.
There were 27 different stallions that had winners there, so it is a massively diverse choice of stallions that can put up winners at over jumps, which is great, really, which is gives us an angle as breeders in the National Hunt market.
It might just be worth reminding everybody what you look for when you are trying to breed a National Hunt horse, particularly now with Cheltenham in mind being the be-all and end-all, and it being such an idiosyncratic track that demands certain things of horses, sometimes quite young horses.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I can only tell you what we look for in young horses, and it's the same whether we're buying foals or if... Fuck it, is someone just thought of it? People keep trying to... Sorry. Yeah, well, I can only tell you what we look for in horses when we're buying foals to our stallions, and that is the one thing that separates it from the flat, and I know it sounds obvious, but it is they have to jump a fence, and to jump fences, the horses that relaxes, is jumps in good rhythm, who breathes properly, who can stay 3 miles, is the obvious one you want to buy. And there are certain things that we think that you can look in a horse and you can't see into their mind, but you can, there's certain traits through breeding you can cross through that. But one of the main things is we always go for horses that are put together in a similar way, with similar angles of move in a similar sort of way, and that's worked for us. I mean, look, it's not exact science and no one could do it 100%, but if you stick to that, you'll have a relatively good chance of having some success.
You have witnessed the conception within your barns of Honeysuckle and Constitution Hill, which is pretty remarkable, I think, in its own way, particularly in Great Britain, by two very different stallions, Sulemani and Blue Brazil. But you identified both of them for different reasons. Just remind me why.
Yeah, well, the Sulemani spoke for himself, really. He was a good racehorse. He had the constitution to race around the world at the highest level. We would actually look more into a horse that is staying in training and got the mind to stay in training than we would as an international sire, to see if he was precocious enough to win it too. I'd be much more inclined to buy a stallion that raced on to his 4, 5, 6 and showed the mentality, the mental attitude to be able to still be a colt and still train on, have the appetite and constitution to win races. So that's, Sulemani was certainly that. And with Blue Brazil, we came across him by chance, Nick, as most of these things do. We have to, at Yorton, we haven't got the finances to go out and buy the stallions that are obvious. We have to try and unearth them and sort of get them bought before anyone else really thinks they're any good or it's not blatantly obvious. And Blue Brazil was one. I saw the stock in the field and I kept tripping on my many trips around France saying, what's that one buy? What's that buy? Blue Brazil. And we best go and have a look at the stallion. And to be quite honest, when we first saw him, he was big, plain horse with huge feet and that, but I always ask them to walk, but mainly I ask them to trot, and then I get them to lunch and canter. And when we saw him step in a trot and we saw his rhythm of his canter, we realised that he wasn't plain at all, and we've managed to, through Richard Benn, we managed to get him bought, which, and the rest is history, really. Yeah,
it's been a remarkable story, and even without Constitution Hill there, he'll have chances, and as the years go by, he's going to be absolutely loaded in a lot of these races.
Yeah.
What have you got coming along now, Dave, that people might be interested in? Okay, names that people wouldn't have heard of that you think is going to be the next, right? It's not just Blue Brazil either. You've had Great Pretender through your hands, you've had Molinas through your hands, you've had Sulemani, as I've mentioned, and more. What's going to be the next one?
Yeah, you've mentioned the stallions. Molinas has got 5 horses entered in Grade Ones, and he never stood over a stand fee of €4,000. We owned him in partnership with Cashman's, and we've got stallions here now. There's one particular one up, but there's an obvious one with Postponed. He's a similar sort of profile as Sulemani. His oldest cropper only turned 5. He's only had 13 juvenile hurdlers. 9 of them have won and 4 have been black tied. And then we have a very interesting younger horse called Itto, who's by Alderflug. He was a Group 1 winner. He's a full brother to In Swoop. Verdam was a Group 1 winner. It's a fantastic German pedigree. I mean, he's only had 2 runners over jumps, so both winners. There's a long way to go with him. but he's off that Malinas sort of profile. Very typical German horse, very athletic, good moving horse. So yeah, but some there, and of course I'm not going to rant about all of them, but there's two in particular that I think going forward we will hear. It's a long game, Miss National Hunt, as we all know. We'll be 5 or 6 years down the line, but I definitely think there'll be all two horses, two stallions that we'll still be talking about.
All right, and any vested interests next week, he says, leading the witness horribly.
Yeah. Well, you and I, big boy, we got Gentleman's Game that your mum kindly bred with us here. And yeah, we're excited about this horse, aren't we, Nick? I mean, we'll have to meet up at a proper party if he does win. But either way, if he just runs as well and gets placed, it's great. I mean, we stand the stallion here, Gentle Wave. And your mum was a great supporter of Yorton, and yeah, we bred some nice horses, and this would certainly be the best one at the moment. But yeah, fingers crossed if he runs well in the Gold Cup.
Yeah, bred some bloody ordinary ones as well, David. But less said about that, the better.
We all breed some slow ones, but anyway, there you
go. All right, well, listen, best of luck, and we look forward to listening to you, to Victor Connolly, to Jess Stafford, to Bertrand Lemaitre, and particularly Jane Mangan on the Weatherby's Bloodstock Cheltenham Festival preview, which will be out the day after tomorrow. Look forward to it. All right, it's time for the weekly review from the point-to-point scene now, brought to you by Thoroughbid's Points to Rules bonus, which dangles a £5,000 carrot for any point sold through Thoroughbid that goes on to win under rules on their debut. Joining me to discuss all things point-to-pointing this week is Sam Davis-Thomas from the Pointing Pointers podcast. And Sam, we might as well start with the most celebrated Thoroughbid graduate, It's on the Line, who 9 days from now could easily have his day in the sun in the Fox Hunters, or the St. James's Place Hunter Chase, as it is now called, at the Cheltenham Festival. Is he going to do that, do you think?
I think he's got every chance, yeah. Obviously, he's been well campaigned. He's been well bought as well. He's already beaten Fern's Lock, albeit I think Fern's Lock has been really well campaigned by David Christie. And he looks really primed for this year and for this race this year. Obviously, missed it last year. But yeah, they had a hard race last time. Obviously, it was well talked about back at Nace when Billoway stayed on like a train. Billoway's worn blinkers twice and he's fell and unseated when he's worn blinkers. It looks like it'd really help him, but maybe they'll stay clear of that. I see Billoway has shortened recently in the betting. But no, it's on the line. He's definitely got a good chance and he's been a great buy through Thoroughbred.
Now, we've got a couple of contenders for that bonus coming up quite soon, so we may as well touch on them. Pike Road is one of them who topped the sale last week. Just £18,000 paid by Harrison Antiques, but has got a bit of form and could be an early contender.
Yeah, he wasn't beaten far at Ballyvodick at the beginning of Feb. And yeah, he's definitely got, looks like he's going to have a bright future under rules.
Now, Tim Underwood is a man who's been training point to point as well. I don't want Tim to hate on me here, but long before I was born, I would say. And he was riding them until about 4 or 5 years ago. And he is an ageless wonder, Tim Underwood, a bit of a legend of the point-to-point field. Now, if he can turn base metal into gold, anyone can. What's he done this time?
Yeah, he's a great character, isn't he? He's gone and bought Stranger Danger, 10,000 through Thoroughbred from Colin Bow. Unfortunately, he said that he would love to run him sooner, but he can't because the horse never came off the books until the end of Feb, although he ran in January the 21st. He can get into a level one. He said he's looked up his form. You know what Tim's like. He's very particular. He can run a level one conditions race without a penalty. And he's actually going to run at the beginning of April at Kingston Blout in the Vine and Craven Point Hunt race. So that's where he'll first start. And that's actually his fourth horse he's bought through Thoroughbred. He's also bought a horse called Killer Kane. And he's also bought a horse for £800 for Inellan Shaw. And they both actually run this Sunday at Charing Park. And he ensures me that Phil York's taking the reins and that Inellan Shaw will win the maiden at Charing on Sunday. So if you're there,
you are. If you are headed to Kent on Sunday, you have been given a tip here. There are a number of Thoroughbred graduates running at the festival next week as well. And there was one that interested you in particular, but unfortunately, it's interested just about everybody else as well.
Yeah, since Kevin Blake tipped it up. Yeah, Harper's Brook. I think he's got more ability than we'll ever know. Like you spoke about last week, Corrick Rambler. I think Harper's Brook, yeah, he's been known to put the pie on a few people's faces. And yeah, I think there's been a lot of money for this horse after Kevin Blake tipped it up. Let's hope he can not disappoint everyone.
Now, even Harper's Brook can't win two races in one day, but that notable feat was achieved at the Charlton Hawthorn point-to-point last weekend. By whom and why, Sam?
Yeah, Shantou Magic for Olive Nichols, daughter of Paul. actually went on and won the Hunt race, as it was a walkover. Unfortunately, he then went on and won the Open as well and beat Singapore Saga. So, yeah, a great old horse, 14 years old, and he's still in the betting for the festival. So it'd be interesting to see if he turns up there.
And he was, did he finish third last year?
Yeah, he ran really well last year.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's been a great servant for everyone, hasn't he? So previously, obviously with Maxwell, and then, yeah. So yeah, good.
Yeah, carried David Maxwell around there a few times. Olive Nichols has now been very successful on Shantou Magic. Congratulations to her. Quite something managing to time your declaration successfully enough to be able to win a walkover and another race on the same card. You were very impressed by a maiden who won at Charm Park. Where is Charm Park and what was the maiden?
Charm Park up north, Yorkshire. 4 or 5 year old maiden up there. Miami Magic, a horse trained by Dale Peters. He made all, a horse by Leading Light. Very rare you see a horse make all and travel so strongly throughout the race. I thought he quickened up off a nice pace, be a nice horse of G&T Racing's as well. Left him 7 lengths behind. He's not actually going to sale, but he is for sale. So I spoke to Dale yesterday. He's liked him a lot. And yeah, I was really impressed with the way he travelled through the race and then quickened up with ease over the last couple.
Now, I was watching the Wincanton Hunter Chase last Wednesday when Espoir de Guy beat Famous Claremont, who really ought to have won. Will Biddick got a bit of stick for this ride, didn't he? Because it said he should have kicked on and shouldn't have sat still and sat pretty and then been left at the mercy of a mistake at the last. But you probably need to know a little bit about the horse.
Yeah, if you watched the ride around Aintree last year, the horse isn't one to be finding a lot off the bridle. He never has done. He needs his hand holding throughout the race. As you can see, if Will had gone down to the last two, you know, without holding his hand, it would probably be a different outcome. He probably wouldn't have got round, to be honest. But the ride he gave it last year at Aintree was superb. Whether they can go back to Aintree on the back of that jumper display, I don't think so myself. Not with any confidence anyway. But Espoir de Guy, he's no mug. He was 150 rated horse, you know, for Venetia back in the day. And yeah, he jumped them silly, different tactics from when he last ran. Made all, yeah, and jumped really well. So yeah, can't knock Espoir de Guy whatsoever.
And talking of Venetia Williams, her own amateur rider, Lucy Turner, who's got bags of experience, won the Hunter Chase at Southall, the Jumping for Fun Hunter's Chase. Is that likely to prove a pointer to anything significant between now and the end of the season?
Just maybe back up the form to Macklin. That horse having time was fifth behind Macklin back at Taunton. So, yeah, it's given him a form boost and he's an interesting horse going forward. The ground at the minute is atrocious. I find it hard to take it quite literally. But no, great for Lucy Turner. And, you know, his horse has really come on. And I think he could go and nick another Hunter Chase by the end of the season.
And what about the pointing this weekend? If the weather plays ball, which it looks like it's going to do for the next few days, we could be set for quite a full weekend, couldn't we?
Yeah, it'd be the first time we've had more than 4 or 5 meetings in a weekend. So it'd be interesting to see how the numbers hold up. But yeah, Saturday off to Fryshoff, did Martin and Cotherston. And then Sunday...
Right, you're going to put... So for the uninitiated, you're going to have to tell us where Fryshoff, did Martin and Cotherston are.
Fryshoff is a long way from us. Fryshoff is the borders. Did Martin is near Cirencester and Cotherston is down southwest.
Okay, so if you're in those parts of the country, there's a day pointing for you on Saturday. And Sunday, Buckfastly, I know, is in Devon.
Devon, yeah, and that's actually been abandoned 3 times. They've not had one meeting there this year, so hopefully they can get the go-ahead. Dalton Park is up Yorkshire again. Banger, you know where Banger is, Nick?
Yeah, that's the Banger on the race course. They run the other way round, don't they, in the points?
Charing's End. Yeah, and Gillsborough, Northamptonshire, just right next to Calabady Country.
Okay, there you are. You've got something for everybody there. And before we leave you, we need to mention that Thoroughbred have confirmed they're extending their offer of risk-free consignment, meaning you'll only pay an entry fee if your horse sells. Their £5,000 pointer rules bonus, which we mentioned at the beginning of this segment, continues to apply for all pointers sold or bought on the platform. And the next sale is on the 20th of March. And the entries close this Friday, the 8th of March. So make sure you get them in if you can. Thanks to them. Thanks to you, Sam Davis Thomas. We'll be back next week for more pointer pointing. Right, off to Hong Kong now with a croc.
Imports to Hong Kong from Ballydoyle always attract attention. They are usually expensive and well exposed from a form perspective. Hence, they also come with a high handicap rating. But we may have found an exception to that pattern at Sha Tin on Sunday. A horse called Massive Sovereign, having his first start in Hong Kong, absolutely bolted in with a Class 3 handicap over a mile and a quarter. And despite Zach Purton being aboard, he started around 8-1. As a rule, Zach's mounts are well under the odds. Now, Massive Sovereign looks set to take his place in the Hong Kong Derby at Sha Tin on March the 24th. He'll line up against Helios Express, a solid favourite after taking the first two legs of the four-year-old Classic Series. He scraped home with Sunday's 9-furlong Classic Cup, just getting up close home, again raising questions about whether he'll stay a strong mile and a quarter in the Derby. A bit more about Massive Sovereign. He's a four-year-old by No Nay Never, out of a My Boy Charlie mare. He ran five times for Aidan O'Brien, winning two races, a Dundalk Maiden on the Poly Track by six lengths, and a Leopardstown Handicap off a mark of 93. Ryan Moore rode him in both those wins. His name then was Broadhurst, and he's an interesting import, and trained by Dennis Yip, a former jockey who's been training for over 20 years in Hong Kong now. He was champion trainer in 2012-13, and he's currently 16th of 21 trainers in the championship. The arrival of Massive Sovereign is certainly a massive boost to his stable. Well, at Happy Valley, we have nine races on the card today. A very, very tricky card on paper, I think. And I think the best is in race five, number seven, Red Hair King. Now, this is a horse who's won two of his 15 starts to date. He's a four-year-old. He's by So You Think. And he's a horse, I think, who's got a lot of upside. He's still got a lot of potential, still well handicapped. Number four, Quantum Patch, is his danger, ridden by Zach Purton. So, race five, number seven, Red Hair King, to win for Matthew Chadwick and for Tony Cruz. And also number four, Quantum Patch, as the danger, take them in a tote swinger, Zach Purton, the rider there. Later on, I'd keep an eye on Chadwick's ride in race seven, number nine, Golden Long, who's had only the three starts so far, showed a lot of promise when winning first time out and looks to be, I think, on the upward climb. He takes a voluntary promotion here to class three and is right down the bottom of the weights and I think will be very, very hard to catch. Race seven, number nine, Golden Long, to win from number one, Watch Buddy. So that's all on the Hong Kong Beat this week. I'll have more for you next week.
All right, well done, and thanks to the Croc. And there's some fantastic racing in Hong Kong to look forward to in the next couple of months. End of April, I'll be going back there to enjoy Golden 60 and Romantic Warrior, hopefully. At the moment, two of the top four ranked horses in the world on the TRC Global Rankings. Cornelius is still with me, and he has a tip for you for today, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Catterick. Just a quick word about poor old Fontwell Racecourse in West Sussex. They've lost another meeting today. Is that about five on the bounce? They're just having a rotten time in their 100th year. It's their anniversary year, the big celebrations in May. I hope it dries up by then. But poor old Fontwell have copped it again with the weather close to the south coast. In North Yorkshire, it is soft ground for Catterick, and I'm going to take you to the Every Race Live on Racing TV Novices Handicap Chase at 2:45. There is a horse in there, number three, called Master Breffni, trained by Mickey Hammond, ridden by Conor O'Farrell. It's had, I think, three runs in Britain since coming from Ireland. The best run was over the course and the distance two races ago. Last time out was a bit too short, outpaced. But today looks a real possibility at a fair price. Number three, Master Breffni, running in the 2:45 at Catterick. Very best of luck to him and to you.
Absolutely. Cornelius, thank you very much. Great to have you back on the pod. Will we see you at some point next week?
Hopefully, God willing.
Excellent stuff. Good. Look forward to that. Wednesday, the 6th of March, that was. And we will see you again tomorrow.